I'm delighted to be here with all of you. I bring greetings from Reverend Linda Lawrence and Gary Lawrence, who have been longtime members of your congregation. They now live in Phoenix, Arizona, and Linda is our assistant minister. So, and she's actually in Mexico today. She's doing a Border Links trip, working with an organization that Arizona Immigration Ministry has partnered with several times to do educational trips across the border, educating people about what's really happening down there between the border of Arizona and Mexico. But she sends her love and her regards, both she and Gary. So I offer that to you. I also want to say thank you for the offering this morning. And this is at least the second time that you've made an offering to the Arizona Immigration Ministry. In addition, your own minister who's on sabbatical, Reverend Matthew Johnson Doyle, has been down to Arizona and supported the work of Unitarian Universalists organizing there and across the country for migrant rights and humane immigration reform. So I am incredibly pleased to be here to say thank you to all of you personally for your support. And I also want to let you know that the work that's happening in Arizona is making a difference. People don't know this, but unknown effects, not well seen, of SB 1070, which was at the time the most egregious anti-immigrant legislation that our country had seen in many generations. We have had periods in our history of being terribly egregious to immigrants and migrant workers. And the one in Alabama is worse than SB 1070. But at the time when that was passed, that was the worst piece of legislation. But one of the immediate effects was that it got people to become U.S. citizens. So Latino immigrants who were permanent legal residents in the U.S. responded when they saw that happening to want to get more involved in this country and to take their rights and their place here seriously. So there have been tremendous voter registration efforts, and that is already changing where we are in this country around immigration reform. But in addition, the protests, the marches, the acts of nonviolent civil disobedience, the faith community, Unitarian Universalists with our Standing on the Side of Love, Golden Rod t-shirts, that has also changed. It changed Arizona almost immediately. So the year after SB 1070 passed a state law, there were five new anti-immigrant bills in the legislature, some which mirrored some of the things that has happened in Alabama with students. And what happened is the business community in Arizona was so negatively impacted by the boycott and the protests that they 60 business leaders sent a letter to Republicans in the Arizona legislature and said, do not take up any more anti-immigrant bills. It's hurting us. And that was enough to get a few Republicans to join with Democrats in defeating those bills. So progress is happening, change is happening, even as it is slow. But I thank you for your support of the work that's happening in Arizona. Now, I thought I would start by just sharing with all of you how I got into this work. I was in Youngstown, Ohio, serving a congregation there, and I went to a leadership development training in California. And I met a woman at that leadership training. Her name was Teresa, and she was one of my roommates, and she shared with me her story. Now, before meeting Teresa, this was more than 10 years ago now, I had no idea that we had a issue with undocumented people living in our country. I was really clueless, ignorant of the issue. And then I met Teresa. So Teresa came to this country more than 20 years prior with her three young children in tow. And she came from Mexico to Southern California. 2 years prior to coming to this country, her husband had died. And there she was, a single mom, three kids, and she couldn't find work to support her family. Her children were hungry, and she was facing the reality of having to give them up because she couldn't support them. And rather than do that, she gathered them together and she walked across the border to Southern California, Los Angeles area, where she knew that she would find work. And so she's been here with her kids 20 years. She's worked as a housekeeper, and she's actually worked for the same three families for all of this time. Her children are now grown. Two of them, at the time I met her, were married. None of her children, nor Teresa, have any kind of status in this country. When I heard her story, the first thing I asked myself is, what would I do if my children were starving? Would I steal food? Yes. Would I steal bread for my kids? Yes. Would I steal across a border when it was the only hope for me to keep my kids with me? I would. And I think that many of you would too if you faced that kind of desperation. Perhaps even some of your grandparents or great-grandparents or great-great-grandparents faced that kind of desperation and it was that desperation that brought them to this country. This is a long-known story of immigrants who come here to work in this country and the ways in which we are always looking for workers from other countries to feed our industry and our labor. So that's what opened my eyes, that there was even a problem. And what I'm grateful for is that my eyes weren't opened by some political rhetoric telling me to be afraid. My eyes were open to the fact that there were people living in this country with no rights, no protections, and had been living here for decades, raising their families. And that, to me, screamed of injustice. Well, then I moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and I was called to be the minister there. And I learned more and more stories. And I can't share them all with you today, but I want to share one of them. This is from a member of my congregation. His name is Daniel. Daniel came with his parents to this country when he was 7 years old. His younger sister was born here in the United States and is a U.S. citizen. Daniel's parents tried to get legal status for their family over the course of the 19 years that they lived and worked here in the U.S. Daniel is now 28 years old. He's married to a U.S. citizen. They met in high school in a future teachers program for excelling students. They have a daughter who just turned 1 year old. Daniel continues to live without any legal status, even though he is both married to and the father of a U.S. citizen. 2 years ago, ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, came to Daniel's mother's home. The agents told his sister that they were looking for a dangerous criminal and could they search the house. When she let them in, they immediately arrested her mother. 12 hours later, at 3 o'clock in the morning, she was dropped on the other side of the Mexico border with no money and no belongings. That's it. 19 years of hard labor in this country, and 12 hours go by, and you're separated from your family. Now, what happened to Daniel's mom is something that happens to people all over this country when they're picked up by ICE. Once in custody, folks are intimidated, they're threatened to signing away their rights and agreeing to immediate deportation. And when they don't sign, then they are held in detention, sometimes for months, sometimes years, waiting to see a judge. Because in immigration detention, you have no right to an attorney, no right to a speedy trial. You have very few rights at all. Daniel and his wife, Tiffany, continue to try to get Daniel some form of legal status. Until that happens, they both know that Daniel could be detained or deported and their family broken up. And in the meantime, he lives with the reality that he may never see his mother again because he can't go to Mexico to see her for fear that he would never be able to return to his wife and child. Now, sadly, these stories are not unique. They echo the stories of so many undocumented immigrants in this country. Stories of people fleeing poverty, making hard choices so that their children might have better lives. Now, even when faced with these stories of suffering, and even more so than SB 1070 is the federal mass detention and deportation policies, over 400,000 people deported last year alone. Even in the face of those stories, there are those who ask, and I get this, but a law was broken, right? A law was broken. People broke the law. What don't you get about illegal, right? Well, here's what I don't get about illegal. How is it that we have now 11 million undocumented people in this country? And not too long ago, it was 12 million, but it's gone down because of all the mass deportations. 12 million undocumented people, that doesn't happen by accident. That doesn't happen because a few people decide to break a law. 12 million people reflects policy decisions, and economic factors that we have not adequately addressed. So how did we get in this situation? Well, let's start in the 1990s. This is hard to remember these days, but in the 1990s, our economy was booming. We had 4% unemployment, which was really not enough to have enough labor for the growing economy. In that 20-year period, the population of Phoenix, Arizona quadrupled. And that mirrors what happened in Nevada and Colorado and New Mexico. So there was a desperate need for people to build roads and infrastructures and houses for all this tremendous growth, as well as to serve the growing restaurant and resort industry. Now, at the same time, NAFTA had been passed in the mid-90s and had undermined Mexican agriculture because all of a sudden it was cheaper to buy American corn, which is highly subsidized by our government, than it was to, in Mexico, it was cheaper to buy U.S. corn than Mexico corn. So people fled the farms in Mexico because they weren't sustaining. And they will go through the same thing we've gone through, where they'll have mega farms. And it's basically an economic transition like we have seen from small farms to large farms. But anyway, people were forced into the city and there weren't enough jobs. Now, our country didn't change any laws around immigration at that time. And in fact, they did make some changes which made immigration restrictions tighter and put a whole lot of military on the border and made it harder for people to come into the United States. Now, migrant workers from south of the U.S. border into the United States has been happening for generations upon generations. Our border has long been porous with people going back and forth. But in the 90s, at the time when our economy was booming, Mexico's economy was falling, we tightened up the border, the military on the border, and tightened down the ways in which people can come legally. So for example, we have a federal policy, it was passed in the 1980s, 5,000 low-skilled visas for people to come from outside the U.S. to work in low-skilled jobs. 5,000, that's not very much when you talk about Phoenix quadrupling in population in 20 years. But not only that, those 5,000 visas have to be equally distributed from around the world. So Mexico only gets a tiny portion of those. So what you had was a system, it was akin to an economic vacuum. An economic vacuum where the demand for work was so great, the population of workers was so nearby, and there were no legal avenues. So people came in. Sometimes businesses sent buses down there to pick up workers, even though they were crossing illegally. But folks needed workers. So that's how we got into this situation. And then once we started closing down the border, what had long been a history of people going back and forth, folks stopped going back. As we made people illegal, the drug gangs that would move drugs over the border began to move people on the border, which raised the price and the danger level. So all of a sudden, people stayed here in the United States. Now, this is where it gets to the moral crux of the issue. And I want to just, one other statistic is that according to the Department of Homeland Security's own statistics, in the last 2 years, more than 200,000 parents of U.S. citizen children have been deported. 200,000 parents of U.S. citizen children deported. So our policies are creating orphans and breaking up families, and this is going to have ramifications long term in our country. So the human rights crisis, what's happening to children, as Dale spoke about, is a result that our country's policies have looked at workers from the South as commodities that can be moved back and forth across a border. But they're not commodities. They're human beings, just like all of us. And so what happens when they come to a new place? They do what human beings have always done. They make home. They find community. They put down roots. They fall in love. They get married. They have children. Pablo Alvarado has said that the crisis here is the fact that we have a system that demands our labor but refuses to recognize our humanity. A. Powell Davies says we need to be critical of fear. We need to work to take it right out of human life, that we need to be critical in the face of bitter prejudices and cruelty. And what he asks of us is challenging. But it was a question that I was taught to ask growing up a Unitarian Universalist. Are we willing to hear another person's story and feel their pain as our own? To imagine ourselves walking in their shoes? Are we able to see that person from another country of another language as our brother and our sister and our kin in our human family? Are we willing to pursue the truth that our purpose in this life as moral and spiritual human beings is not to pursue some elusive deity out there, nor to pursue some salvation through material gain, but rather our moral purpose as spiritual beings is to learn to love one another right here, to love our neighbor as ourself. Now, I don't know what all the right answers are when it comes to policy around immigration, but I know that what needs to change in this country is that people's hearts and minds need to be open to the depth of injustice, and that we need to own our own culpability as a nation in creating this broken system. When we turn young adults with dreams of college into criminals, we are wrong. When people who came here, or in some cases were brought here, are now chased down by police and treated like dangerous criminals when their only intention was to provide a better life for their children, then we are wrong. And when all our policies focus on criminalization and enforcement rather than the root causes of the problem, we are not creating solutions, only more problems. Well, As many of you know, comprehensive immigration reform is being now talked about. Some feel that it may actually happen. We need to remember as Unitarian Universalists and people of faith that comprehensive immigration reform also needs to be humane immigration reform and respect the humanity of laborers in our country. A. Powell Davies says, "Stop long enough to recollect the miseries of the world we live in." That's where we need to stop before we move ahead on policy. And Congress needs to hear from people of faith on this issue. Fear is powerful. The rhetoric around immigration is good at making Americans feel afraid of our neighbors. It's good at tightening and closing off our hearts, but love is stronger than fear. And when we can hear the stories of people facing desperate times and giving everything to help their kids, when we hear those stories, when we can see ourselves in those stories, our hearts are opened. And when we see the injustice and the cruelty of the system, not with closed hearts, but with open ones, we realize that there can indeed be a better day. That we can imagine a country that values work and workers and provides ways, legal ways, for people to connect to work and have their rights and dignities as workers honored. At the core of our liberal faith is the belief in the unity, the oneness of humanity, the humanity of every person. So as people of faith right here in this moment, we are being called to show up and speak out and educate ourselves and our neighbors, to witness together that we can indeed turn the tide away from the growing rhetoric of anger and fear to love, and to policies that make our country a more just country. The moment is coming after many years of struggle, but our voices are needed to make sure that whatever reform happens, that it honors the humanity of workers and doesn't lead to more families being split up. This faith of ours, as A. Powell Davies says, this faith of ours is connected to that faith that Jesus was talking about when he said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." This faith has breathed itself into life again and again all over the world, even as policy and creed and all sorts of negativity have tried to bury it. That truth that we are one human community, that we will never know the love of what is given so many names, but A. Powell Davies says is the love of God, that we will never know that love until we first learn to love one another. That is the faith at the center of who we are as a people and the message that can actually change how we go forward with immigration reform. May we be such a people and such a faith that takes that commandment to love is the core of who we are as religious people. May it be so.